Good afternoon. My name is Deshandra, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Sequel Communications for the first quarter of 2010 earnings results conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to Pete Abel, Senior Vice President of Corporate Communications for Sequel. You may begin your conference.
Good morning, and welcome to this discussion of the first quarter 2010 results for Sequel Communications Holdings 1, LLC, and its subsidiaries, which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started this morning, we would like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual and quarterly reports, which are posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our quarterly earnings release for the period ended March 31, 2010. Both our earnings release and quarterly report have been posted to the Investor Relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. With that, I'll now turn the call over to our CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining. I'm very pleased to report that we enjoyed an exceptionally strong first quarter, and we remain in outstanding financial condition. We generated $6.4 million of free cash flow in the first quarter, as defined in the earnings release posted on our website. We continue to delever. As defined by the indenture, total leverage was at 5.3 times EBITDA at March 31st. Net of all cash, our leverage was at 4.9 times EBITDA at March 31st. We had approximately $255 million of cash and cash equivalents on hand with no current plans to draw on our $200 million revolver. Our recent issuance of $600 million of senior notes allowed us to eliminate our second-term loans, and this streamlines our balance sheet and gives us a more efficient capital structure. The first quarter of 2010 represented our 14th consecutive quarter of pro forma revenue growth, with approximately $411 million in total revenue, an increase of 6.8% over the year-ago period. First quarter adjusted EBITDA was $147.4 million, which was up 11.2% over the year-ago period. Revenue-generating units, or RGUs, totaled more than 2.9 million at the end of the quarter, an increase of 92,000 over the prior quarter, including a nearly 5,000-unit net gain in basic video customers. The first quarter was our best quarter ever for net gains in total RGUs, as well as net gains in digital and high-speed Internet customers. In fact, our net gain in total RGUs during the first quarter of 2010 was 16% better than our total net gain during the first quarter of 2009. And that's particularly notable because we did not have the benefit this year of last year's digital transition. In addition, we saw a rebound in advertising sales in the first quarter, with revenues in this category up more than 10% over the year-ago period. Average revenue per unit, or ARPU, in the first quarter was $110.58, more than 10% higher than ARPU in Q1 of 2009. We also continued to make progress during the first quarter in bundling customers. In addition to driving units in ARPU, bundled customers are less susceptible to competitive offers and churn. In total, we added nearly 28,000 bundled customers in the first quarter. As a result, bundled customers represented 55.5% of all customer relationships at March 31, 2010, up 6.5 points since March 31st of 2009. This growth in bundled customers was largely attributable to growth in Triple Play customer relationships, which represented 17.8% of all customer relationships at March 31st, up from 12.3% a year earlier. We continued our progress with favorable bad debt results, with bad debt and collections expense as a percent of revenue down from 1.3% in the first quarter of 2009 to 1% in the first quarter of 2010. In fact, bad debt and collections expense decreased more than $750,000 in the first quarter of 2010 versus the first quarter of 2009. This achievement is especially notable when you consider that we grew quarterly revenues by more than $26.3 million year over year. Next, I'd like to comment briefly on our bandwidth investment plan, what we call Project Imagine, which calls for approximately $230 million of infrastructure investments through 2012, above and beyond our traditional capital spending levels. We estimate these additional investments could drive $1 million more in success-based capital through 2012, namely for advanced digital set-top boxes. In a few moments, Tom will summarize our progress on Project Imagine during the first quarter. We're now in the second phase of the program, which involves moving a number of cable systems to all digital lineups and turning off most of their analog channels. To accomplish that, we're distributing digital adapters for all customer TV sets that require such devices in order to view digital signals. We are currently distributing digital adapters in 16 markets across 5 of our operating regions. When completed, this effort will reclaim significant bandwidth in the affected cable systems, allowing us to add more high-definition channels, further expand the availability of our video-on-demand service, and complete additional channel bonding to continue providing market-leading internet speeds, which enhances our competitive position. We're very proud of our first quarter results and continue to be very enthusiastic about our overall year-to-date performance. We believe we're in excellent position to continue to see growth in RGUs, advertising sales, and commercial business services in 2010. I now turn it over to Tom McMillan, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide additional perspective on Project Imagine and our operating results for the first quarter. Tom?
Thanks, Jerry. I'd now like to drill down into some of the operating results that Jerry touched on. As Jerry noted, we ended the quarter with more than 2.9 million revenue-generating units, or RGUs, up 92,000 units over the end of the fourth quarter, and more than 198,000 RGUs, or 7.3%, over the trailing 12 months. On basic video, we ended the quarter with approximately 1.24 million customers. While that mark is down 3.1% in the trailing 12 months, it's up nearly 5,000 customers, or 0.4%, since December 31. Basic penetration of estimated homes passed at March 31 was 46.9%. On digital video, we ended the quarter with nearly 576,000 customers, up more than 30,000 units in the quarter and more than 64,000 units, or 12.5%, in the trailing 12 months. The unit gains in the first quarter this year were nearly double the unit gains in the first quarter of last year. Digital penetration of basic video customers at the end of the first quarter was 46.3%, up from 39.8% a year ago. Along with our growth in digital video, we added approximately 19,600 DVR customers during the first quarter, nearly 24% more than we added in the first quarter last year. Over the last 12 months, we added more than 52,000 DVR customers, an annual growth rate of nearly 23%. DVR penetration of digital customers grew to 48.5%, up from 44.5% a year ago. Looking at the high definition or HD category, we've added nearly 51,000 HD customers since the first quarter of 2009, bringing HD penetration of digital customers to 47.8%, up from 43.9% a year ago. Total penetration of advanced digital services, both DVR and HD customers, stood at 52.2% of digital customers at the end of the first quarter 2010, up from 48.2% at the end of the first quarter 2009. On high-speed internet, we finished the quarter with nearly 784,000 residential customers, up nearly 35,000 units during the quarter and more than 78,000 units, or 11.1%, since March 2009. As a result, residential data penetration was 30.5% of estimated data homes passed, up from 27.8% a year ago. On telephony, we finished the quarter with more than 300,000 residential customers, up nearly 22,000 units during the quarter and more than 96,000 units, or 46.7%, since the year-ago period. As a result, residential telephony penetration at March 31 was 14.2% of estimated telephone homes passed, compared to 10.1% a year ago. In addition to our progress with residential phone, we added more than 1,400 commercial customers during the first quarter, representing more than 1,000 line adds per month, up 26.9% from the fourth quarter. With respect to bundled customers, as Jerry noted, we added nearly 28,000 in the first quarter and more than 77,000 over the past 12 months. As of March 31, 55.5% of our customers took a bundle from us, up from 49% a year ago. The current penetration of bundle customers represents nearly 710,000 total customer relationships, up 12.2% since March of last year, with Triple Play customers having grown 43% during that period. Let's now look at ARPU in the first quarter. As Jerry mentioned, total ARPU was $110.58, up 10.3% over the year-ago period. Video ARPU was $56.81, up 6.1% over the year-ago period. This increase is attributable to higher penetration of digital and advanced services, as well as customer rate adjustments. Data ARPU was $32.71, down 2% versus the year-ago period, and telephony ARPU was $29.83, down 15.5% versus the year-ago period. The year-over-year declines in these ARPU categories were largely the result of bundling and package discounting, as data and telephone services generally represent the second and third product into the home. Triple Play monthly ARPU remained at $130 plus, and monthly churn of Triple Play customers continues to be lower than single product customer churn. Next, I want to comment briefly on Project Imagine, our three-year initiative to bring more TV, internet, and telephone services to our customers. When Project Imagine is completed, HD service should be available to approximately 97% of our customers, and we should average approximately 90 HD channels on our lineup, with capacity in most areas for up to 200 HD channels. We should also have VOD service, telephone service, and DOCSIS 3.0 technology deployed to approximately 90% of our customers. The first phase of this project was substantially completed in the March-April timeframe. At that time, we had increased speeds for approximately 600,000 internet customers in more than 50 cable systems, deployed DOCSIS 3.0 to nearly two-thirds of our customers, and as part of that, launched MAX 107 service in our Georgetown, Texas system. We've deployed video on demand to more than 60% of our customers, added more than 600 HD services across multiple markets, and expanded the availability of HD service from 86% to 90% of customers. Finally, today I want to provide an update on our efforts to build a door-to-door sales team. As I mentioned on our last call, we are building this team to help us gain more customers among the 1.3 million homes that we pass but do not currently have a relationship with. Several of our cable industry peers have great success gaining new customers through the door-to-door sales channel. Our plan calls for nearly 100 sales agents to be knocking on doors by midsummer. We are making good progress towards that goal and are having reasonable success in gaining new customer relationships. We recently hired Tom Wheeler as our Vice President of Direct Sales. Tom has been leading our door-to-door efforts on a contract basis since November. Tom brings to Suddenlink more than 20 years of residential and commercial sales experience, having worked previously for American Broadband, Charter, and the former AT&T Broadband. We are excited to have Tom on the Suddenlink team and look forward to him leading our efforts to build our direct sales channel. I want to thank you for your time today, and I'd now like to turn things over to our CFO, Mary Medusky, for a closer look at our financial results during the quarter. Mary?
Thanks, Tom.
Today I will discuss the financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings I, LLC, and subsidiaries for the first quarter of 2010, adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I will also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. Our quarterly report is available on our website. For the bank lenders listening to this call, our bank lending package, which covers Sequel Communications LLC and subsidiaries, has been posted to Intralinks, including a copy of our compliance certificate. As we expected, we were in compliance with all of our bank covenants at March 31, 2010, all with significant cushions. At March 31, our total funded debt outstanding was approximately $3.06 billion, comprised of $600 million of 8.625% senior notes, $1.97 billion of first lien term loans, $487 million of second lien term loans, and $3.5 million of capital leases. We have $200 million undrawn revolver fully available, except for $12.1 million of outstanding letters of credit. At March 31st, we had approximately $255 million of cash on hand. On May 4th, 2010, we issued an additional $600 million aggregate principal amount of 8.625% senior notes due November 2017. These additional notes, issued under the November 2009 indenture, were sold at a premium to yield an effective interest rate of 8.167%. We used proceeds to repay $487 million outstanding under our second lien term loans and for associated fees and expenses. We will use the remaining net proceeds for working capital and general corporate purposes. Pro forma for this new issuance, our total funded debt outstanding was approximately $3.17 billion, comprised of $1.2 billion of the 8.625% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings I, $1.97 billion of first lien term loans at Sequel Communications LLC, and $3.5 million of capital leases at Sequel Communications LLC. In connection with issuing the additional notes, the amended second lien guarantee and credit agreement and the associated intercreditor agreement were terminated. In addition, we terminated $500 million of related interest rate swaps. We currently have $1.925 billion of interest rate hedges in place, covering substantially all of our first lien debt. The weighted average duration of our hedge portfolio is approximately 2.4 years, and the weighted average cost of funding the senior notes is 7.8%. Pro forma for the transaction and payment of fees and expenses, including the payment of call premiums on the second lien debt and swap breakage costs, our cash balance at March 31st would have been $344 million. Our pro forma total leverage ratio would have been 5.45 times at March 31st, and net of all cash, our pro forma total leverage would have been 4.9 times. Now for a few comments on our financial results. As Jerry mentioned, total revenue for the first quarter of 2010 was $411 million, representing growth of 6.8% or $26.4 million over first quarter 2009. Video revenues increased 2.8%, primarily due to customer growth in digital video and advanced video services, as well as a basic video rate increase, offset in part by lower number of basic video customers. High-speed internet revenues increased 8.1%, due to an increase in residential high-speed internet customers and growth in commercial high-speed internet services to small and medium-sized businesses. Telephone revenue increased 31.6%, primarily due to an increase in residential telephone customers and growth in commercial telephone services to small and medium-sized businesses. Advertising revenues increased 10.4%, largely due to increases in national advertising, primarily political advertising. Other revenues increased 9.5% due to increased rental charges for HD and DVR digital boxes and broadcast retransmission fees, among other factors. Operating costs and expenses rose 4.6%, primarily due to higher programming costs, increased telephone service costs, higher marketing and network operating expenses, and increased employee-related expenses, offset in part by lower bad debt expenses and lower circuit expenses. As a result, adjusted EBITDA for the first quarter of 2010 was $147.4 million, an increase of 11.2% from the same quarter last year, resulting in an adjusted EBITDA margin
of 35.9%, an increase of 140 basis points. Income from operations for the first quarter was $63.5 million, an increase of 28.2% compared to $49.6 million in the first quarter of 2009. Net loss was $1.9 million for the first quarter 2010, compared to a net loss of $9.6 million for the first quarter of 2009. Capital expenditures in the first quarter were $79.8 million, compared to $54.3 million in the year-ago period. Capital expenditures for Project Imagine, including related success-based capital, were approximately 35.7 during 2010. For all of 2010, we continue to expect capital expenditures to be approximately $330 to $335 million, inclusive of Project Imagine-related capital. As Jerry mentioned, the company was free cash flow positive in the first quarter. Finally, I'd note that on May 11th, we signed an agreement to purchase a cable system in Greenwood, Mississippi, serving approximately 8,200 customers. This acquisition is expected to close in the third quarter of 2010, at which time it will complement our operations in Greenville, Mississippi, approximately 50 miles to the west. The purchase price was approximately $20.3 million, subject to adjustment. With that, I'll conclude my comments and turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions. I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call, and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed in our earnings release or annual report. Operator?
Thank you. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad now. Your first question comes from the line of Jason Kim of Goldman Sachs.
Great. Thank you for taking my questions. Jerry, can you share with us your general take on this, the Title II or Title II Lite? I envision that there will be virtually zero impact to your near-term and maybe not even intermediate-term business profile, but now, how do you think this regulatory overhang will impact other aspects of the industry right now, let's say like M&A, for example?
Well, Jason, I have a little sympathy for Chairman Jenikowski. He has to have a Solomon-like wisdom to thread the needle here. He wants to make sure that there's non-discrimination of Internet traffic, but he definitely wants to make sure that he doesn't in any way hinder investment in the broadband infrastructure. He wants to continue to promote broadband availability and increase in penetration throughout the U.S. And so let's talk about two things that we agree with him. We pretty much have common goals. We're about 65% penetrated with broadband in the U.S. right now. He wants to get that closer to 100%. And clearly, a lot of those customers increase in broadband penetration would be our increase in cable customers. So we share that goal. And it's a great possibility of a partnership between the government and the cable and telephone industries to increase penetration. Secondly, he stated publicly and privately that he wants to narrowly construe the situation such that he doesn't want to affect rate regulation, opening up of networks, and other similar concepts. We also share that. So we share those common goals. How you get there is maybe where we differ. We have been classified as a informational service since day one. It was solidified in the Brand X Supreme Court case. To classify us now as Title II, albeit with a light regulatory touch with the liberal use of forbearance, may not necessarily be where we are. But as you suggest, however it comes about, if he does go with Title II and rely upon forbearance of most of the items that are critical to our future investment, it will have little to no impact on our business or other businesses going forward. And frankly, I don't think it will have a significant impact upon values in the industry of companies making infrastructure investments are really any significant impact on M&A activity, as long as the FCC holds true to what they've been saying, and I take them at their word at this point.
Okay, thanks. My next question is, with respect to retransmission, different operators are taking different approaches in terms of how they're trying to deal with this. And in your case, you are passing through the cost to your customers as a separate line item on the bills. And there are operators that have chosen not to do that. So can you tell us what you've been hearing from customers on this, if there have been any a lot of resistance or complaints from your customers? And do you think you may need to reconsider this pass-through strategy as your retrans fee increases in the future years?
Jason, we instituted this at the start of 2009, and it was amazingly successful. It exceeded our expectations. We've had very little negative reception for the customers. We've combined it with a pledge that we will not make any money off of this retransmission consent pass-through fee, such that if we ever have decreases in the RTC fees, either through negotiations or through changes in the laws, we will refund that to the customers. And so it's been a great success. We've had very little negative feedback. And so, no, there's absolutely no reason to change our strategy at this point.
Okay, just one last housekeeping question. What was the programming expense for the quarter?
We don't separately disclose programming expense, but I will tell you that our growth rate was about 4.5%, which is the impact of rate increases offset by basic customer losses.
Okay, thanks.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, simply press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad now. Your next question comes from the line of Adam Spillman of PPM America.
Thanks. First question I have is just on CapEx. You've been very clear on the project imagine costs, and I think you've been helpful in breaking out the CPE component that is not in there. Just trying to roll those together. Because obviously there was some, before Project Imagine, there was some base level of, CPE costs associated with your subscriber growth. So, I mean, just to, at the risk of being overly simplistic, this is a pretty big year of Project Imagine. You continue to add RGU. So if we look at this $80 million that you spent in the first quarter, is annualizing that, terribly off to think about, CapEx as we go out for the next couple years of Project Imagine?
Our CapEx is uneven, over the quarters. It's not ratably distributed over the four quarters. Based on what we're seeing in the first quarter, we have no reason to believe that our capital expenditure guidance of 330 to 335 wouldn't be the appropriate guidance. How it unfolds over the quarters, is subject to lots of different variables.
But clearly we had a lesser amount of capital expenditures historically before Project Imagine. And as we complete Project Imagine over the next 2 to 2.5 years, we would expect capital expenditures to decrease, of course.
Great. Second question is, I think, Mary, I heard you right, cash balance is over $340 million right now when you roll in the recent financing?
At March 31st, it would have been about $340 million pro forma for the transactions.
Got it. Now, how should we think about that? What is your intention for the use of that cash? And if there's not anything all that interesting to spend it on, why hold so much cash that doesn't earn a very good return?
Historically, we have maintained cash balances in the $200 million plus range. And as we've mentioned on our prior calls, the reason we had done that is capital availability in our sector was dramatically curtailed over the last couple of years. Our cash balances have grown, of course, as we have generated EBITDA and free cash flow, which took us to cash balances of $255 million before the transaction. In terms of why we maintained that level of cash balance, it's frankly because the environment that we found ourselves operating in was dramatically uncertain. We don't have a revolver. We didn't set up our credit agreement with a revolver that we could move up and down of size back in 2006 because such a revolver was not available. And so we had no other opportunity in the negative credit environment other than to hold on to cash. Going forward, we will look at, and I should also say that we upsized our transaction just recently, primarily upsized it in a small way. We thought that the capital that was available to us at the price that was available was very attractive, small upsize. We did, as I mentioned on this call just a moment ago, we have a small acquisition that we'll be consummating in the third quarter, and we have no particular items earmarked for the capital for the cash balances at this point, but we live in a very ever-changing environment, and we like the flexibility that having a cash balance provides to us.
Yeah, just it wasn't too long ago that we were in a Sunday night with a pending investment bank declaring bankruptcy, trying to figure out where our cash was it safe, do we need to draw down on the revolver. And that really wasn't very long ago. So we are taking a very conservative approach. We don't know if the Euro debt crisis could spill over and cause further turmoil in the financial markets. So we're taking a very conservative stance.
Great. And just a final one, your subscriber data is again very helpful when you break out the different subs by bundled to two or triple play. It allows you to take a look at the single-play customers. That's clearly kind of where the decline is coming from. Can you just help us think through those single-play customers? They either kind of either upsell into packages for you or they churn, I presume. Is there a way you can help us think about kind of that breakdown? How many of those are you retaining versus losing? And what's kind of the, you know, is there a differentiating factor that allows you to kind of keep somebody and bundle them versus losing them?
So maybe I'd take a crack at that this way. Our sell-in percentages on new customers are 49% single play, 38% double play, and 13% triple play. Now, obviously, we've grown the base of double and triple play customers, which means we do have people migrating from single to double and double to triple. As we've grown our bundle base, we've even grown double play customers as a percentage of our customer relationships. On the disconnect side in the first quarter, about 54% of our disconnects were single play, 36% were double play, and around 11% were triple play. So you can see that the singles are obviously churning at a higher percentage than their base, and the doubles and triples at a lesser percentage than their overall base. We have indicated previously that we've been much more competitive from a pricing standpoint in for folks who take two and three products, and we have not elected to sell single play video product, for instance, at price points that might match what our competitors are doing in the $25 range.
That's very helpful. Just so I heard that you said 54%, 36%, and 11%. Disconnects for one, two, and three play?
Correct.
Thank you.
I'm showing no other questions at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for your continued interest in Suddenlink/SQL Communications, and we look forward to continued positive results. Thanks.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.